Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to start.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's game day. You only got one job to do. That's win. That means you stay focused for 4 quarters. Know your assignments and finish on every play. Don't be looking for shortcuts. And don't even think about making excuses. Because if you want the W, you're going to have to earn it. Nothing comes for free. Not 1 yard. You pay for it with sweat, with determination, with heart. You do things the right way. Because that's the only way. You pick up your teammates. You keep your head high. You remember everything you went through to get here. Because at the end of the day, there's only one person looking back at you in the mirror. And that's one person you don't want to cheat. So now it's on you. It's your decision to make. You're going to hold back and leave a little something inside? Or you're going to do your job and leave nothing?
All right, boys and girls, it is Saturday morning, December the 10th. My gosh, where has the year gone? It is the balance gridiron, although we're kind of shifting gears a little bit because the gridiron is working its way out of season, but we are still the balance, and we always will be the balance, so this is where our founding fathers began, right here. Balance Radio Network. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente of the aforementioned. And joining me, as always, is our intern slash now co-host slash guy who didn't know he was going to make it yesterday, but he's here, bright in Bushtown, Mr. Brian, super Colts fan, Jensen. How are we doing, sir?
Good. What's going on?
Doing fantastic. Do you have your radio up, sir?
You can hear that? Wow.
Can hear that. Gosh, Radio 101 says that the host controls all background music. And joining us also, our panel of experts. In this corner, Mr. Michael Daly. How we doing, sir?
Ho, Mr. President.
And in the other corner, coming all the way from across the globe, Mr. Axel, Chad. How you doing,
sir? I'm doing good. How are you, Tom?
Fantastic. Guys, it's so good to have you on board. We got a jam-packed show for everybody today. Obviously, we're going to talk a little fantasy football, but we're going to kind of mix it up a little bit and just talk NFL because it's getting to be that playoff time for the fantasy teams. And, guys, let's face it, if you've not done it before now, you're not going to do it. So, most, and on a lot of cases, fantasy football playoffs start this weekend. So what I thought I'd do is we're just going to talk NFL for the next 30 minutes, mix in some fantasy talk along the way. Obviously, listeners, if you have any questions, give us a call, 917-889-8516. Coming up here at the bottom of the hour, Ed Kratz from Philadelphia. The City of Brotherly Love is going to give us a call in. He's a beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles, for Calkins Media, Buck County Courier Times, Burlington County, New Jersey Times. Yeah, he writes for everybody. We'll just say that. He's going to give us the new spin on the whole Sandusky thing. Talk about Penn State's bowl appearance, upcoming bowl appearance. Going to talk a little Philadelphia Eagles and Michael Vick with him. And then also, coming up at 10 o'clock, tell you the fun does not stop. Mr. Chris Reed from Inside St. Louis, I-70.com, and Bird Brick, right from the St. Louis Cardinals. Yes, we're going to talk about the new $250 million. That's a billion with a capital B, player for the Angels. He's still wearing red. It's a different red, all because of the color green. And if you follow my tweets, No, I already tweeted that. So we're going to get into that conversation. At the bottom of the hour, Brian and I will be talking with Jimmy the intern, I believe, about the upcoming IU game. And somewhere in the mix, we're going to fit in this whole thing of what's going on with the NBA, Chris Paul, and so forth. So, guys, buckle up. It's going to be a fun ride. All right, guys, let's just jump right into it. Let's start at the top, Green Bay. Nobody better right now than Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. Are they stoppable? We'll start with you, Chad.
Green Bay needs somebody who can slow down Aaron Rodgers and who can control the tempo or system. I mean, the only one with a defense who can somewhat slow down Aaron Rodgers, I think, is the 49ers. And they had the misfortune of playing the Ravens on a short week, and they still did okay on their defensive front. But offensively, I mean, Green Bay is not at the same level as the Baltimore Ravens to cause the 49ers offense that many issues. So 49ers actually have the best chance, and probably till the playoffs, I don't think anybody can really stop Green Bay. I mean, look at the schedule. At Kansas City, then they play Chicago, then they play Detroit to finish. So Detroit at the end. Jim Schwartz is a tricky guy. I mean, his players have played with a chippiness. When he played with Jeff Fisher, he put that hit on Sean Merriman that changed Sean Merriman's career. And when the Patriots were playing their last regular season game in the 2006 season, one of his offensive players put a hit on Rodney Harrison and took him out for the season. And whenever Rodney Harrison played the Colts, Peyton Manning never won. And we played the AFC Championship game versus the Patriots, and this time we won. Schwartz always coaches for his players to be on the edge, and if there is a possibility of injury for Green Bay, it's in that last game. They should go for perfection, but arrest their banged up starters as much as possible, and not sacrifice health. And the simultaneous story is, can the Colts go 0-16? Just like, can the Packers go 16-0? So the Colts can go 0-16, but based on how I'm seeing Orlovsky hitting wide receivers in stride just for a change, I think we might have a good shot at winning the Titans game at home or the Jaguars game on the road. So I do think we will at least win one game. So hopefully Orlovsky gives us a Christmas present by beating the Titans at home. So
that'd be nice. All right, next, Mr. Michael Daly. How are we doing, sir?
Good, sir.
All right, your thoughts on Green Bay. Are they unstoppable? Are they the next Super Bowl champion? What are your thoughts?
They're very close to being unstoppable. I do think they'll be next Super Bowl champion. I think on the NFC side, I do think San Francisco has a chance against them. I think it's going to be a rough, tough road to hoe. But I think in the Super Bowl, though, if the Ravens make it to the Super Bowl, I think the Ravens have a shot. I'm not sure anybody else does. I think just the Ravens just have the ability on defense to mix it up enough, catch Green Bay off surprise enough times to really cause them some problems. I think it takes a little more than a tough defense. They have that swarming defense where you really don't know exactly what they're going to do until they do it. The only thing I've seen really all that effective against the Ravens defense is when you go with a quick no huddle and speed it up a little bit so they don't have a chance to make all their moves. But if Green Bay does that against the Ravens, I think Green Bay be all right. But I think Ravens have a chance to mess them up, and probably San Francisco too, like Chad was saying. And injuries, I mean, you never know what, one person can get injured and, like an Aaron Rodgers, and change everything.
All right, Brian, you're up next.
Well, let's just say I plan on going to the Super Bowl this year, and I already bought my cheese head. So I don't see anyone beating them. I mean, I think Chicago might have the best chance, you know, the rest of the regular season, but, I mean, that best chance is pretty much, you know, going to be a blowout. And I don't know, there's only two teams I really see possibly giving them any kind of, any kind of chance, and that would be the Ravens or possibly the Steelers. But I still don't see, I still don't see it happening. And the Packers are just they're on fire. Aaron Rodgers, I've always said he's not on fire. He's just that good. You know, you got that kind of chemistry, and you know you want to look at, you know, look at the off season. You know, there was no off season. Look at how much this team has changed in the off season. They really haven't. You know, and all these other teams have, a lot of them have changed a lot. You know, that's I really think that's one of the reasons why we're seeing kind of a crazy, like, you know, this team to beat that team, that beat that team. I mean, how, you know, something like that last year. I mean, you don't see it. You know, there's a lot of losses, a lot of wins. You're kind of like, you know, like, wow, you know, they really beat them, or, you know, and this team has not changed. It's pretty much the same team as last year, and you know they're just continuing. I mean, it just hasn't stopped, and I just don't see it. You know, I just don't see no one stopping them.
All right, well, we're going to see if the Packers can be stopped, if they are going to go unbeaten. And as we know from right here in Indianapolis, that is a very hard task to do. And in fact, even these days, I don't even know the coaches are that worried about it. Once they clinch the playoff berth, and once they win their division, I think they let off the gas a little bit. We also have a new expert who joins us from time to time. Is this Nick?
Yes, this is Nick.
Nick, it is fantastic to have you on board with us. And I don't know if everybody has heard you or talked with you before, but I do know Chad is on with us as well. Guys, and our listeners who have not heard Nick has his own little radio show now. It's about 18 minutes long. He's a 12-year-old child NFL prodigy. That's my opinion. There's no proof on that. But the guy knows everything there is to know about, well, at least the Patriots. So we're going to shift to the next number one team in their division, the New England Patriots. So let's start with you, Nick. Let's start with you about the Patriots.
Well, I think they're going to, against this week against the Redskins, I think it's going to be a very good game for the Patriots. Because I think Patriots are going to win this by a fair amount. Like I've said in the past, and the only reason that the Washington might score is because of the Patriots' secondary. They need to get their act together. They just got Jones. Yeah, but that's, Jones isn't going to change the whole secondary. Also, it's going to be the Belichick versus Shanahan show again. Last time Belichick and Shanahan met was in when Shanahan was with Denver, and but Shanahan does have the lead over Belichick 5-3 when he was with Denver, and Belichick was obviously still with the Patriots. But I think Patriots are going to – Brady's going to come out gunning. But like I just said, it's going to be – I think Steelers and Redskins might have a chance because of that Patriots secondary. We can't be putting in Julius Edelman, and that you just can't be doing that, and putting in a wide receiver. He's good, but he's a wide receiver. So, yeah.
All right. That's Nick from Maine. And I tell you what, this kid – And Nick, what's the name of your new radio show?
Well, my radio show is called Sports Talk 101 with the football kid Nick, and I'm actually doing it in about 20 minutes. It starts
okay.
A 30-minute show for everybody who's out there. It's Sports Talk 101 with the football kid Nick.
Now you're not going to be taking my listeners with you, Nick. Now come on, buddy. I gave you a big break here. All right, Chad, what are your thoughts on the New England Patriots or any questions for Nick about the Patriots?
New England Patriots are quite the enigma. It's like Tom Brady has never played well versus the Broncos. So they got the road game coming up. at Denver. If the Denver defense has few injuries, I'll make the bold prediction that the Broncos are taking down the Patriots because of Tom's historical problems versus the Broncos and how he hates to play at Mile High. I mean, from playoff losses, I mean, he's got one of the worst losing records against only one franchise, and that is the Denver Broncos. And so basically, if the Denver Broncos minimize turnovers and the Patriots' defense doesn't generate that many turnovers and Tim Tebow doesn't turn the ball over much, the Patriots will prevail over Rex Grossman, but I'm making the bold prediction that they'll go down at Denver. And
Oh, sorry to interrupt you, but I'm calling back. I got to get off this phone. So I'm calling back on this other on the other phone. So you can just pick me up because I'm waiting on the line right now.
Okay, we got you. All right, go ahead. Go ahead, Chad. Sorry.
Yeah. So basically, what Tom Brady does match up well versus anybody but the Ravens. So basically, the Ravens being undefeated at home, if they get home field advantage.
Hey, one moment, Chad. I'm so sorry. Hey, Nick, can you turn your monitor down a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, the Patriots match up well versus the Steelers because the Steelers linebackers and the Patriots spread out the wide receivers and their tight ends. Versus the linebackers, the Steelers linebackers struggle in coverage. Whereas the Ravens, their strength is the D-line, and their D-line is much, much better than the Steelers. So if Patriots want to get to the Super Bowl, they better not be going through the Ravens. Anybody but the Ravens, the Patriots can prevail in the AFC, but the Ravens will be the toughest test for the Patriots in the AFC.
All right, guys, I want to shift teams just a little bit here because I want to make sure we can get a lot of these number one teams in. Who would have thought, and I tell you what, these guys are on a roll, and I am on the Tim Tebow bandwagon. I love what he's doing. I think he's a great role model. I think that it's great that he demonstrates his faith on the field. I think he's awesome. So, Mike, it's your turn. Let's talk about the Denver Broncos and Tim Tebow.
Well, he's on a roll right now, that's for sure. People should not doubt him. I mean, he may be unorthodox, but, you know, he gets the job done. Yeah, I heard someone say the other day that the main reason that sportscasters or sports writers are down on him is because they predicted him to do nothing, and he is doing a lot. And they can't really afford to be wrong. But, I don't know. I mean, I think he's got it going. You just shouldn't never underestimate him. I think he's got a source of strength. He relies on God as a source of strength, and he just has the mentality to come through. I mean, to prevail when it doesn't look like he can. So I really, they're not going to win it all this year, but I think they have an opportunity to do quite a bit, though. They have an opportunity to do a lot of damage.
All right, Nick, do you have anything on the Broncos?
Yes, I do, actually. I like Tebow. I don't love him, I like him. He's really good. He's done a lot with what he can do in this league. We see what he can do. Great quarterback. Again, I would like to see him pass a little more, but he's just a solid quarterback. Broncos, Broncos, the whole team, they're a pretty good team. They're 7-5. They're playing Chicago on Sunday at 4:05. I don't know if you guys have read, the Wall Street Journal is calling Team the God's quarterback. I don't think that's what you should be saying about him, but he's just a solid he has a solid team behind them. They're great. They're good. And he's just a good quarterback. But I would love to stay on the show, but I have to go start my show, and I'm just promoting my show around to the guys I know, seeing if I can get some callers to call in.
All right. Sounds good, buddy.
Thank you.
Steal your audience.
Good luck.
All right, buddy. All right, we'll see you.
Thanks for taking my call. And, just in 10 minutes, my show starts. Sports Talk 101 with the football kid, Nick.
There you go, guys. All right, listeners, stay right here. Don't go anywhere. Oh, my goodness. This is the Balanced Radio Network. We'll be right back, and we got about 10 minutes left of NFL talk. I want to talk about some other teams around the NFL. And coming up here at 9:30, we got Ed Kratz from Philadelphia calling us to break down what's going on there in at Penn State. The latest news from Sandusky, as you know, has been rearrested this week with a $250,000 bond. Cash bond, that is, that he did make, and he is out of jail. We're going to talk about Penn State and their bowl appearance this year, little Michael Vick and the Philadelphia Eagles with him as well. This is The Balance on the Balance Radio Network. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente. We'll be right back.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fastlane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Do you like what you hear on the Balance and Fantasy Football Huddle? Then check us out on the World Wide Web. Facebook, search The Balance. Twitter, GBalance. You can also send us an email at gbalance@ymail.com. And at any time, check us out on www.thebalanceonline.com. Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions. Work with them today.
Welcome back to The Balance. This is The Balance Gridiron on the Balance Radio Network, streaming coast to coast. So good to have you along. Guys, isn't it always good to hear the young kids? And I'll tell you what, Nick has been on the show a couple times. He's no stranger to the show. But what do you guys think about Nick from Maine? He's got it going on, doesn't he? He is on the right path. You know, so after this show, guys, on a time that you're not listening to this show, go listen to Nick. Although you have to be in Maine to pick him up, I think. So I think we're safe right now, guys. we've lost Brian. Brian had some personal stuff that came up unexpectedly, and he had to drop off the air. So it's me and Axel and Michael Daly, and we're going to continue this conversation on up into the half-hour mark at 9:30 when Ed Kratz from Philadelphia calls. And we'll just kind of stay on the line until he calls, guys, and we'll just keep talking football and as well. And we'll kind of have you guys on the line. We'll start off with him when he gets on the line with us about the Philadelphia Eagles and keep the NFL topic going. Yes, guys, there's a lot to talk about. I have not forgot about the NBA. I have not forgot about Albert Pujols. I have not forgot about a lot of stuff. But we are talking NFL right now. So if you got any questions for our expert of panels, give us a call our panel of experts, our expert of panels. I did that again, didn't I, Mike?
Yeah.
So let's just kind of move down here. I want to talk about some more number one teams. And a team that we haven't talked a lot about on this show and just has kind of flew in underneath the radar out on, in the West Division, in the NFC West, and that's the San Francisco 49ers. So, Chad, have you had an opportunity, and of course you have, but that's a rhetorical question, but have you had a chance to look at any of the San Francisco 49ers this season?
Yes, I have. I mean, the thing about the 49ers is they play well in all three phases of the game. Efficient offense. I wouldn't say elite, but very efficient. And they don't turn the ball over much. They may take a few sacks, but they don't turn the ball over much. And they run the ball very well. They have a run-blocking offensive line. Unless they run into a team that defends the run exceptionally well, like the Ravens, and can rush the passer, there are a few teams that can do both exceptionally well. And that's when they will have problems, because their O-line is not meant for pass blocking as much against exceptional pass rush. And so basically against a team like the Saints or the Packers, they can control the tempo by running the ball well. And I don't see the Saints and Packers at the same level of run defense like the Ravens or even the Steelers. So that's the reason I like the 49ers to being a running team to go into Lambeau and be able to control tempo and keep the game close. And those guys, they got some speed on special teams too. I mean, to break one, and they play a field position game. And there's no reason that David Akers is the highest fantasy football scoring kicker because of the fact that he can convert 50 yards, and these guys play a field position game, and they just kind of grind you out. They like to play the grind-out game. And even in the games that they've lost, they ground you out. But Miles Austin had the game of his life. But then the San Francisco secondary, early when they lost to the Cowboys, the secondary wasn't as good as they are now. They're the number one defense now. The secondary is much improved compared to before. And then basically the other game that they lost was on a short week. And if they had 2 weeks to prepare for the Ravens, and if they met up in the Super Bowl, I bet the result might be actually different. I just feel that they're pretty solid in all facets. They don't beat themselves. So that's a hallmark of a good team. People just knock them down saying that they play the NFC West. I mean, they have played the NFC East as well, and they played who's on the schedule. I mean, Jim Harbaugh has got them on the right path of playing solid football, and you got to give credit where credit is due. So it's not like overnight Alex Smith became an elite quarterback or something. It has to do with the coaching. The coaching has done a tremendous job.
All right, Mike, what are your thoughts on the 49ers?
Earlier in the year, Shannon Sharpe said they would not be a good team because Jim Harbaugh made the mistake of thinking that Alex Smith can play in this league. He was wrong about that. I think they're on the right path. Jim Harbaugh is a winner. He always has been. I think he's really been a favorite around here when he was playing. When the Colts made it to AFC Championship when he was playing it, I think they really were overachievers that year. They were a good team, but you know, I don't think they're really quite good enough to make it that far. But like I say, he's a winner. He led them. He got them there. And I think that's what he's doing with the 49ers. 49ers, they probably have some future years where they're probably going to win some more Super Bowls, I would think. I don't think they're going to do it this year, though. I think for a team that makes that much of a rise in 1 year, normally they can't really make it the whole way. I think the Packers, their experience, they're, like Chad was saying earlier, that they've been together. Maybe it's you that said it. Their team hasn't changed much, and they're used to playing well together. I don't think they can get past the Packers, but I think they can do a lot of damage. I think they can put some teams out.
Well, and you know, here's the thing. Like I just said, I think that the 49ers have just kind of flew in underneath the radar, and nobody's really paying attention to them. A lot of other people are taking the limelight right now, which I think the 49ers are completely fine with that. And now I don't know if they're going to be in the Super Bowl, but I could tell you one thing. I think that they're very, very, very good team. Obviously, I think they're going to win the West Division if they haven't already. I don't think anybody's clinched their divisions yet, so I'll have to double-check that. But I think that they'll certainly have no problem winning the West Division. So let's talk about the South. Obviously, the New Orleans Saints and Atlanta are doing a battle out there, Chad. So what are your thoughts about that? And joining us also as well in our NFL conversation is Mr. Ed Kratz from Philadelphia. How are we doing, sir?
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Oh, it's good to have you on board, sir. Ed Kratz, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles. Since we got you online here, and I got my panel of experts, not my expert of panels, but my panel of experts.
I know a lot about panels.
That's right. On the line here, and we wanted to make sure that we picked your brain. I know we called to talk with you a little bit about Sandusky, but while we got you on the line, let's talk some Philadelphia Eagles. Obviously, they're coming from behind to catch up with the Giants and the Dallas Cowboys. So we'll start with you, Ed. Philadelphia Eagles have a chance to go very far in the playoffs, or do you think that that it's going to be between the Giants and Dallas there in your division there?
Well, a lot of people in the Eagles locker room, a lot of the players will tell you that they still have a chance, and so will their coach, Andy Reid. But to me, it's a real long shot, obviously, at 4-8. Excuse me, and you have two teams ahead of you to pass, because I do not see a wild card coming out of the NFC East. So to get into the playoffs, you're going to have to win the NFC East to get in. And to do that, the Eagles will have to win out, which would put them at 8-8. And they're going to have the Cowboys lose 3 out of their last 4 and for the Giants to go 2-2. So they are far, far away from controlling their own destiny, that's for sure. And then that means they would have to win 4 straight games, which they have shown no ability to be that consistent all season. Their longest winning streak is only 2 games in a row. So I think they're out of it. In fact, my story that I'm writing for tomorrow is going to kind of talk about the top 10 reasons really why to continue watching if you're an Eagles fan these final 4 games. And there are reasons, but I don't think any of them have to do with the playoffs. It'll be the Giants or the Cowboys that will win the division.
Mike, I don't know if we still have Axel, but Mike, do you have anything for Ed on the Eagles?
I'm here.
Hello. Chad, we still have Axel. We lost Mike. My bad. I have too many things going on my screen here. Okay, we have Axel. We don't have Mike. Okay, Axel, do you have anything for Ed on the Philadelphia Eagles, Michael Vick, or anything to do with the Philadelphia area?
All I know is the mathematical probability when the Giants and the Cowboys are playing each other for 2 games. So basically, yeah, which games are you counting on the Cowboys to lose and which games are you counting on the Giants? It has to fall so perfectly on top of the Eagles running the table. I mean, I just don't see the Eagles making the playoffs. I just do not. I mean, especially with the Lions and all those teams with 5 losses fighting for the wild card spot, the Lions, Bears, and Falcons, I think, have just 5 losses, just like the Cowboys. And, yeah, like you said, I agree with him on the wild card will not come from the NFC East. And most likely only the team that wins the NFC East will be the one. So it's probably going to be Giants or Cowboys. But what I don't understand is why did they not address the DeSean Jackson contract early enough, just like the Titans addressed the Chris Johnson contract?
Well, that's a good question. I think Chris Johnson held out until he got his contract, which in hindsight, maybe DeSean Jackson should have done that. He held out for the first 10 days of camp, but then returned. whereas Johnson continued to hold out until he got his contract. I think the Eagles probably would have extended DeSean Jackson last year had there been a labor agreement in place, and they were waiting to see what that labor agreement would be before they went ahead and extended him. It was a calculated risk on their part, one that proved to be a big mistake, I think. I remember in 2005 when Terrell Owens played with the Eagles, and he wanted a bigger contract after his 1 year here in Philadelphia, and he held out and really kind of drove a stake through the heart of that team. The Eagles were coming off a Super Bowl season. The difference is Terrell Owens had just signed a 7-year contract when he was traded to Philadelphia prior to the 2004 season, and already he wanted to have that one torn up and a new one put in place. Jackson's contract, he's still playing on his rookie contract, which is paying him $600,000 this season. It seems to be, in my opinion, the Eagles, what they should have done instead of signing all these big-name free agents in the offseason, such as Steve Smith, who has really done nothing, you know, the former wide receiver for the New York Giants, him, as well as even Vince Young as a backup. Vince Young has proven that he's still sort of a work in progress. I don't know if he'll ever be the kind of quarterback that he was for a season or two in Tennessee. But instead of using that $2 or $3 million that they spent on those two players, maybe they should have made a good faith offer to Jackson and say, you know, DeSean, look, we're not ready to extend you and give you a long-term deal, at least at this point. Maybe after the season we will. But here's another $2 or $3 million for this season, just because of what you've done for us in the past. And, you know, that probably would have mollified Jackson or got him on board a little bit, because clearly as the season's gone on here, he has been a dividing force in that locker room. He mopes around the locker room. He doesn't really interact with his teammates. He's kind of in and out of the locker room as quickly as he can be. He's the first one to leave after a practice. He's got his civilian clothes on, and out the door he goes. So I think that kind of has a wear and tear on the team, and I think that is one reason, one of a couple, that are the reason that the Eagles, with a lot of talent, are sitting here at 4-8.
All right, well, we're joined with us by Ed Kratz, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles, and my only got one expert left, so panel expert, Mr. Axel, Chad. And I tell you what, and I wish you could have been on earlier, Ed, with Nick from Maine. He calls in every now and then. He knows everything there is to know about the New England Patriots. And he's just a child prodigy. He's got his own little radio show, little local radio thing up there in Maine. He's fun to listen to, but he knows a lot about I think he's after our jobs, Ed. I really do. So he's fun to talk to. But we've got Chad on the line with us as well. And Chad is a self-taught, independent guy who just works a regular job. He's just a regular guy. Doesn't get to cover the games like you and I do, Ed. But I tell you what, whenever he helps me with my lineup in fantasy football, unless I'm playing him. And for some reason, he just disappears. I don't know why that is. Well, guys, I want to talk a little bit about this Dolphin and a few things about this Dolphin and Eagles matchup, and then we'll get into the Sandusky conversation. And as you can tell, yes, I'm putting that off as long as possible because it really is one of those conversations that I don't think anybody in the media likes to have, but we've got to have. So we'll just save that for the last part of the conversation. But obviously the Dolphins, the Eagles, the Dolphins have won 4 of their last games. And our 4-8 but then the Eagles have lost 4 of the last 5 games, hanging on by a thread in the NFC playoff scenario. Like we just said, I don't see that happening. But let's talk a little bit about Michael Vick. He's back on the field. Miami's front seven, and during the conference call down to Miami, Michael Vick said that he was not going to be taking very many chances in the open field, Ed. I don't believe that at all, not for a minute. What are your thoughts on Michael Vick and the Miami Dolphins and their front seven there?
Yeah, well, about Michael Vick, I agree with you. It's hard to get a leopard to change his spots, I guess, as the saying goes. And, you know, Mike Vick has always been kind of a risk taker once he has gotten out of that pocket. He likes to fight for every yard, and, you know, that's an admirable quality to have. But, you know, you have to be smart, too, and he needs to learn how to slide when the situation warrants and fight another play. You know, the Eagles are paying him a lot of money to stay on the field. What was interesting to me was when he was asked if he was wearing any sort of a flak jacket or anything to protect his ribs before they got hurt against the Cardinals, before they were broken, actually, against the Cardinals. And he said no, he wasn't wearing any sort of protection. And I asked him if why wouldn't he be wearing anything if what happened last year in Washington when he got his ribs hurt at the time, why wouldn't he just keep wearing a jacket? And he just said it made him feel uncomfortable to wear that sort of thing. But he's going to do it tomorrow in Miami, and I would imagine he'll do it for the rest of the season, if not his career. So we'll see. We'll see about Michael Vick. Clearly, the Eagles' running game will be challenged against that front seven of Miami. Their nose tackle, a kid out of Utah who's from Samoa, Pago Pago Samoa. It's not often you get to reference Pago Pago Samoa, you know, in a story or on the radio or wherever you're talking about it. But a kid named Paul Salai, I think is how you say his last name, a 6'4", 355-pound nose tackle. And, you know, he's tough to move, even when you double-team him. You know, I've seen a little tape on the guy, and he's going to present some problems for the Eagles' running game. And as you know, LeSean McCoy is the second-leading rusher in the NFL right now, just 3 yards behind Jacksonville's Maurice Jones-Drew. And no Eagle has led the NFL in rushing since Steve Van Buren in the late 1940s. So it's going to be incumbent, I think, on Vic to kind of get started quickly, work the passing game a little bit to kind of soften up that front seven. I think Miami's pass defense is 24th in the league. Their run defense is 5th. They have good linebacker play. So I think Vic's going to have to, you know, they're not going to baby him here tomorrow. They're going to come out, and I think they're going to want to throw the ball, which the Eagles always want to do anyway. But I think it's going to be incumbent on Vic to get used to wearing that flak jacket and make some plays downfield especially.
All right, Chad, Axel, do you have anything more for Ed on the Dolphins and the Eagles?
Not much. I mean, I think, I don't know, maybe they should just operate just like the Saints operate with Drew Brees. I mean, he's always, I mean, just because Drew Brees is just barely 6 foot and he can't see over the taller defensive linemen, they always put that, put the offensive line in a shotgun formation, and they spread out the wide receivers a lot of times. And maybe that's what the Eagles need to be doing way more with Vic, and so that he can see better he's not as tall as Vince Young. So.
Yeah, great point, Chad. And I think, and maybe you can correct me on this, but I think another advantage that the Saints have and Brees have is that I think their wide receivers are pretty tall. I think Brees has some tall targets to throw to. So he, you know, even though he is small, he knows that if he just kind of throws the ball up a little higher or can get it downfield to some of those taller guys, they can make a play on it. The Eagles have shorter receivers than DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin. And Jason Avant's not real tall either. So maybe that makes a little difference. I don't know. I think the Saints receivers are tall, Chad, I think. Maybe,
yep.
You know. But, I think that might make a little difference too. Is just having the height in a receiver to get the ball up high to know when he's going to make a play. The Eagles have tried that with Riley Cooper, who filled in for Jeremy Maclin the last 3 weeks. But Cooper, I'm not real sold on him. He was a 5th-round draft pick. He made some nice plays, but he's also dropped a few balls, one or two of which led directly to an interception. So I'm not sure he's the answer. He's 6'5". But I'm not sure he has the hands to kind of stick in this league long term. We'll see about that.
It would be nice if probably they send somebody in motion always to keep the linebackers honest. The Eagles do not do that as much with the speed that they have with DeSean Jackson. I mean, you see the Saints using whoever has some speed going across motion a lot of times. That will force the linebackers not to just blindly pass rush.
Chad, guys, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I've got to cut this off. We'll finish this another time. Chad, thanks for joining us. We'll catch you next week. Ed, can you, you're going to stick around and talk to Sandusky with us, correct?
It's Chad, okay.
Chad. Right. I have a little information on Paterno, too, if you want it.
Oh, we do. We'll be right back right here on the Balanced Radio Network. It's Saturday, which means it can only one thing. It can only be the Balanced Gridiron on the Balanced Radio Network.
Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions. Work with them today.
Fastlane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fastlane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Do you like what you hear on the Balance and Fantasy Football Huddle? Then check us out on the World Wide Web. Facebook, search The Balance. Twitter, T-Balance. You can also send us an email at tbalance@ymail.com. And at any time, check us out on www.thebalanceonline.com. Boys and girls, welcome back to the Ballads. Ballads Radio Network. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente of the aforementioned. So glad that you could join us on a Saturday. You know, I want to make sure that we welcome our brand new sponsor to the Ballads Radio Network, Terry's Indy Pet Service, right here in Indianapolis. I tell you what, Terry has got something for your pets. And in fact, she's going to be taking care of my
Hello?
All right, Ed, are you with us?
Yes. Hello.
That has got to be the weirdest thing that has ever happened in my history of radio. It's like everything went dead, and everybody's like shrugging their shoulders or whatever, and like everybody's running around here. I'm like, what in the world happened?
I was 5 seconds away from disconnecting and calling back. My phone line went dead. I thought I somehow got disconnected.
It's the weirdest thing. I don't know. Well, we've got people that know about more about what these buttons mean than I do, and they just said keep talking. We'll get you back on. I think we're back on now. So let's just regroup here. And it would happen when I was getting ready to talk about our brand new sponsor, Terry's Indy Pet Service. Guys, give them a call. She actually even does pet taxi service. She does poo removal. She does basic grooming. I mean, she'll even clean the ears. She'll take care of your lizards, your snakes, your tarantulas. Nothing is out of bounds for Terry's Pet Service in Indianapolis over there on Sunnydale Boulevard, 317-410-337. Give Terry a call. I promise you will not be disappointed. All right. Back with Ed Kratz from Philadelphia, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on there at Penn State in a few minutes that we have left here. Obviously, the recent charges with Sandusky, and you said as before we went into break that you've got some new news on Joe Paterno. So can you tell us what that might be?
Yeah, well, what I'm hearing, and this has been reported by, I believe, one newspaper, and I have since talked to a couple sources that I know that are closely connected with the Penn State program, is that Joe Paterno is not doing well health-wise. He was, of course, diagnosed with lung cancer shortly after this whole after he was fired from his job. But his son put out a release saying that it was a treatable form of lung cancer. But my understanding is now that he is taking daily chemo and radiation treatments, which for an 85-year-old man going through the stress that he's going through with this whole situation at a school that he loves. And a program that he coached for 60 years cannot be good. My understanding is he's not doing well. He's sort of in grave condition, and I don't know how that's all going to play out. But, my understanding is he's not doing well. So we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, that's terrible news because, like you said, he's a fantastic coach, and it's just sad to see someone fall the way that he's fell. Which, yeah, I think a lot of it may have been his fault, but at the end of the day, come on now, he's not the guy that was out there molesting kids, and he just happened to maybe be caught up in a bad situation and didn't want to believe the worst about one of his closest coaches. Now, he's been rearrested on some new charges. Can you bring us up to speed on that? I understand that he's made bail, and I know you were on the show the other day, and you said that his attorney was going to make bail. Is that how did all that come together, or...?
Well, yeah, my understanding was that he was able to come up with $200,000, something with his home, that he was able to get that equity out of his house, and he had $50,000 in cash that he was able to – he did have to come up with $250,000 in cash, but it wasn't his lawyer that put that up. Sandusky was able to work it so that he could come up with that kind of money. Owning his home was a big part of it. So that's what enabled him to get out of prison the next day. He did spend the night. I remember Tommy asked me a question about whether or not he'd be in his own cell, and yes, he was in his own cell for that one night he spent in prison. And also, he's wearing an ankle bracelet. He's confined to his home. He's not allowed to leave his home. He has a preliminary hearing on Tuesday, at which time my understanding is that 8 of the victims at this point, I believe there's 11 of them, but I believe 8 of them are scheduled to testify if all 8 is necessary. This hearing is just to determine whether or not there will be a trial, if there's enough evidence to carry this forward to trial, which it seems to me that there will be. So it's very preliminary. And I imagine Sandusky will remain out on bail, confined to his home until a trial date is set sometime in the new year.
Well, you know, again, it's sad that we've got to talk about this thing, and I feel bad for the victims, and it just seems like that this story's never going to end, and I just, you know, I wish that these aren't stories that we had to talk about, and because, you know, there's so much more positive things that are going on in sports, and we got about 5 minutes left with you, then we're going to have Chris Reed with us at the top of the hour. Chris Reed from Inside St. Louis, I-70.com. And Bird Brain, the blog. Yes, guys, we're going to talk about Albert Pujols. Ed, can you believe that contract? I mean, I know as the guy that probably covers the Phillies, you're not too sad about it, about him switching over to the American League. But truly, I guess St. Louis is the gateway to the West. He's going to be wearing a different red next season, all because of the color green. I think it was somewhere around $265 million that Chris is going to help us unpack all of this. But that's a quarter of a billion cap with a capital B, billion-dollar athlete.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? As a sports writer, what are your thoughts about this story this week with Albert Pujols?
Well, the market bears what it bears. You know, if the market can afford to pay him that sort of money, then, you know, good for Albert. I'm just sad that he's leaving St. Louis. You know, Phillies aside, mm-hmm. I always root for a player to, you know, an iconic type player that came up through an organization. I always root for them to stay with that organization. It happens so rarely that one player stays with the same team for the balance of his career. I was trying to think of some guys that have done that, and there aren't many. You know, I know Jimmy Rollins with the Phillies right now. I'd love to see them bring him back just so he can stay here. Peyton Manning in Indianapolis, you know, with mm-hmm. all the. Well, what's going to happen with that situation? Are they going to draft Luck and get rid of Peyton? You know, I'd like to see Peyton stay cold. I don't know how people in Indianapolis feel about that. But, you know, I always root for the player to stay where he is. I think it's good for a sport, good for the game. And I was hoping Albert would stay in St. Louis and they'd make a statue to him and put it out, you know, outside the stadium where they have all the other statues of their former great players. And I was sad about that part of it. I wish, you know, I always want a player to stay, you know, where you associate him. Being, which to me, Albert will always be. He could go on to a great career in California, but to me, I think he'll always be a Cardinal.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm a diehard Cardinal fan, and my wife is a Cub fan, so, you know, but yeah, it's sad for the fans. I mean, I don't think it's quite as bad as the whole LeBron James thing, but yeah, and so, you know, Chris Reed's going to be with us here at the top of the hour from Inside St. Louis, I-70.com, and Bird Brain, the blog. So he's going to help us unpack this whole thing with Albert Pujols. Well, real quickly, why I've got you here, what are your thoughts on today's Heisman Trophy? Who do you think it'll be?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's going to be Andrew Luck. I just think he'll get it on his name alone. But, you know, there's a lot of people saying that Robert Griffin III is going to win this thing. And, you know, I've seen Baylor play twice, and, you know, he's certainly an electric player. I wouldn't mind seeing him get it. But I think Luck's going to win.
And obviously, I would assume that you probably do some covering of the Sixers. NBA's back in business and making headlines already with Chris Paul on the three-way Lakers trade that's blocked by the owners of Charlotte. What are your thoughts of that?
Yeah, why did they bother going out on strike if nothing was going to change? It just seems that the rich get richer, right? I mean, I think that trade's eventually going to happen. And now I hear that David West might end up in Boston. So let's just put Boston and L.A. in the NBA Finals for the next 5 years.
I am totally with you. And still, this goes to show the problem that we have with the NBA even owning a team. Now all the owners have to approve. What is this, a fantasy league? I'm not sure. Well, hey, Ed Kratz. From Philadelphia, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles for Calkins Media. Ed, where can people find your work at?
www.phillyburbs.com/Eagles.
All right, Ed, don't be a stranger to the show. You're always welcome, buddy.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate that. You guys have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Ed Kratz, I'll tell you what, it's always good to have him on board. Unfortunately, he had to come on and talk with us a little bit about this newest Sandusky stuff, and we had a good conversation with him, though, about the Eagles and the Dolphins coming up. It's always good to have him on board. And coming up next, Chris Reed from birdbrain.com, Inside St. Louis, I-70.com. This guy knows everything there is to know about the St. Louis Cardinals. He's a fan. He's a writer. And, guys, he's got some news for us that us Cardinal fans were not happy to report on. But, you know, we're going to talk about it. We're going to unpack this new contract, this new thing with Albert Pujols. Good or bad? I don't know. We'll find out right here on the Balance Radio Network. Do you like what you hear on the Balance and Fantasy Football Huddle? Then check us out on the World Wide Web. Facebook, search The Balance. Twitter, GBalance. You can also send us an email at gbalance@ymail.com. And at any time, check us out on www.thebalanceonline.com.
Fastlane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fastlane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions, work with them today.
After 11 seasons, Albert Pujols is leaving St. Louis. The three-time National League Most Valuable Player has agreed to a 10-year, $254 million contract with the Los Angeles Angels. Pujols' contract, which is subject to a physical, is the second highest in baseball history and only the third to break the $200 million barrier. Alex Rodriguez got a $252 million 10-year deal with Texas before the 2001 season, and then a $275 million 10-year contract with the Yankees before the 2008 season. Pujols led the Cardinals to a World Series title this fall, his second with the team. He'd also been pursued by the Miami Marlins, but they dropped out Wednesday after agreeing to a deal with pitcher Mark Burley. St. Louis exercised a $16 million option on Pujols' contract after the 2010 season. The slugger rejected a multi-year extension that included a small percentage of the franchise last winter, then cut off negotiations with the club on the first day of spring training. Pujols spent all 11 years of his major league career with the Cardinals. St. Louis also offered him a 10-year deal, but he chose to leave for sunny California.
It's a very exciting day for the Angels community, for Southern California as a whole, and we're very excited about what this can do to our future and what it means to this organization today. An exciting day.
Pujols hit 37 home runs in 2011, running his 30-homer streak to 11 straight years. In leading the Cardinals to the World Series win, he became only the third player in history to hit three home runs in a World Series game. In addition to the Pujols signing, the Angels also agreed to a five-year contract with left-hander C.J. Wilson, a deal worth $77.5 million. Jim Bell, The Associated Press.
All right, welcome back to The Balance, Balance Radio Network. Thanks to our friends over at The Associated Press for providing us with that soundbite of the biggest news story of the week, at least one of the biggest sports news stories of the week. And joining us now is Mr. Chris Reed of birdbrain.com, Inside St. Louis, and I-70.com. Chris, Thanks for joining us again here on the Balance Radio Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to have you, and I wish that we could be talking about something new, bright, and cheerful on a Saturday morning, like he signed a deal with the Cardinals, but that was not to be. So let's unpack this a little bit. What do you think was going through Albert's mind? Let's word it that way. When he chose to go to the Angels, what appears to be purely for money. Not that I blame him, because that's a hell of a lot of money. But there's also something to be said for loyalty to a team. And I just think that he did a big slap in the face to the St. Louis Cardinal fans. What is the reaction of the fans in St. Louis, and what is the reaction of the city?
Well, it's obviously hard to truly know what Albert was thinking. I mean, we can definitely speculate and probably make pretty solid guesses in terms of going after the money and maybe being a little disenfranchised with the Cardinals and how the process went as far as signing this extension, because it was a two-year process at the very least. But, you know, Cardinals fans are feeling the sting. It's not one of these, well, he was here and it was great and now he's gone and we don't care. That's definitely not the way it works in St. Louis with iconic Cardinals players. But, you know, life does go on. Baseball life anyway. You know, we don't want to make too much of a mountain out of this molehill, but it's definitely a new look team. And, you know, with Tony La Russa leaving for retirement and Albert being gone, this Cardinals franchise looks a lot different than it has over the last 10 or 15 years.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I think Albert Pujols could have been a wealthy Cardinal for life, obviously. You know, I'm sure that he would have a statue. Maybe he will someday. I mean, that's not to say that he won't ever have a statue erected outside Busch Stadium. But when you look at some of the greats, Bob Gibson, you know, Stan Musial, some of the great Cardinals of all time, Albert Pujols has to be in that conversation. And in my mind, he will always be a Cardinal, even though he's moved on to wear a different color red. He will always be a Cardinal. So let's talk about the Cardinals' life after Albert Pujols. Obviously, St. Louis is a huge baseball city. It's one of my favorite cities to visit during the summer. I love to go out there and sit in 100-degree humidity with a bearded dog at Busch Stadium. I mean, to me, that defines being a pure American. So obviously, the Cardinals move forward. I think they're still going to sell out their stadium. I think they're still going to have a fan base. And obviously, they proved during the World Series that they can take relatively nobody, air quotes, and put them in a position to do well in their team. So obviously they do well. Tony La Russa, is he coming back? Do we know? What are some of the things as the Cardinals, as an organization, and as a club, what do they do now post-Albert Pujols?
Well, the actual team itself, you know, the physical team, has some questions to answer in this offseason still. Now that the Pujols' contract was not signed, they have some money to play with. GM John Mozeliak said as much in his interviews and press conferences since the signing that, you know, the money they were planning on paying Albert will be reallocated to the team, and they need to figure out what they're going to do with shortstop and second base. They have a bit of a hole in the outfield with Alan Craig being injured, requiring surgery this offseason and not being ready likely for opening day. So they're going to look at some semi-big names. I don't think Prince Fielder's on their radar. I don't think Jimmy Rollins is on their radar. But it may be more kind of plugging holes with veteran presences that can really contribute the way guys like Nick Punto and Rafael Furcal contributed last year. And those two guys may themselves come back. I don't know. I mean, that platoon worked really well in the middle of the infield with Skip Schumacher and Furcal and Descalzo filling in. And, you know, the Cardinals have a good mix of young players and old players. I think, well, I shouldn't say old players, veteran players, sorry. And I think that balance is what they really need to succeed in this division, in this league. You know, they may also go after some help in the outfield, because I think John Jay is a great player and has a good role, but they're probably going to need more now that Lance Berkman is likely to be playing first base and Alan Craig is likely to be out for the first few weeks or month of the season. So it wouldn't surprise me if they went after someone like Carlos Beltran, which seems odd considering he's been a Cardinal killer for most of his career. But those are the names they're going to go after. They're going to keep that veteran and young player balance, and I think they're going to compete for the top spot in the division again. Most of the players from the World Championship team are back. It just so happens that the biggest of the big names are the ones that are going to be gone.
Well, speaking of big names, and you brought this up just now that you don't think the Cardinals would seek after Prince Fielder. Now, see, I'm kind of thinking that maybe they might. And the reason why I think that is because he's going to be asking for big money. Obviously, Albert Pujols raised the bar on getting that big money. Prince Fielder is a fantastic player. They want to get him I would think that they would want to get him away from the Brewers. And they offered Albert Pujols a pretty significant contract that I think that if they offered that same contract to Prince Fielder, he would give it some heavy consideration. Do you think there's a possibility that they would swap Pujols for Fielder, or you don't think that would happen at all?
Well, there's always a possibility, but what they said before Albert signed with the Angels was that if they didn't, for some reason, sign Albert, they wouldn't go after Prince because the only reason they were putting together the package they were offering for that 10 years and $220 million or whatever was because it was Albert Pujols. And they didn't want to, it appeared anyway, they didn't want to lay out that kind of money and years for someone that wasn't already a team icon. Now, Prince Fielder is capable of doing a lot of things in the rest of his career, and he's got at least between 5 and 10 years left in his career to be a really effective player. He's only 27. But I think the Cardinals felt they were paying for legacy as well as production with Pujols, and that wouldn't really exist with Prince Fielder here. He would have to rebuild that from day one, and almost maybe from less than that, if you consider kind of how he was viewed as the enemy for several years with being with the Brewers. So I just don't know that they would commit that type of term and dollar figure to a free agent they were bringing in at the same position. There's a lot of strange karma there that I just don't know that they want to get into.
Now, Chris, we're talking with Chris Reed from Bird Brain Inside St. Louis and I-70.com, talking with him about the St. Louis Cardinals and obviously the biggest news stories of the week, Albert Pujols signing a huge deal. Chris, St. Louis has always did well with their farm system. Is there anybody hanging out there in Springfield or any of the other farm teams that the Cardinals might look at, okay, well, now's the time we need to bring this young fella up and let's introduce him to our clubhouse? Is there anybody out there that you see that happening with?
The farm system is semi-strong at this point. The two biggest names are Shelby Miller and Carlos Martinez. They are pitchers in the on the Double-A level. I believe they're both at Double-A at this point. And they both throw really hard. They're young, highly touted prospects. I believe Shelby Miller might have been ranked in a couple of top 10 lists among prospects across the country. I don't know, they've been getting a lot of accolades over the last year, and they are expected to take the reins in the rotation when the contracts for Kyle Loesch and Jake Westbrook run out. I don't know if that means they'll be on the opening day roster in 2013 or if we'll get a look at them at the end of the 2012 season or, maybe their call-ups in the middle of 2013. I don't know. The timeline is, as you know, with pitchers is always something that's what they call a fluid situation. But I don't know. I'm not sure what other position players would be ready to come up. I think Tony Cruz and Brian Anderson will get a look to fill the backup catcher role in spring training. I think Matt Adams is a good candidate to get a look to come up and maybe play a bench role or a backup first base role. They already gave a lot of time to guys like Fernando Salas and Eduardo Sanchez, and Jason Mott obviously is here to stay. So they've been cycling guys through that really have looked good and have some pretty good credentials from the minor leagues. So I think this role of drafting and developing players and bringing them into the major league team and seeing what they've got is definitely going to continue this year and over the next few years. You know, Chris Carpenter is in the waning days of his career. They're going to need a big name to fill his shoes. And who knows what Yadier Molina will do after his contract is up. Albert was his best friend. He may not stick around. I don't know. I haven't heard anything that he plans on leaving, but then again, we never thought Albert would leave, so anything's possible at this point.
Right, and especially when you have enough money, and again, it always is about the money. And you know, I understand why a player would make that kind of a decision. I mean, I would thought maybe, you know, the Marlins were inking a deal with him, and I thought, you know, with the Latino community. But I don't think that he's going to – that the Latino community, it's going to make that much of a difference out in California. So I can only see that it's about money. On the flip side of it, we look at Albert. He's a very giving person. He's obviously got his charities that he works with, so he gives a lot of money back. But, you know, fans just aren't happy with it. There's I'm sure you've probably seen it. There's a video going around, you know, YouTube that's kind of gone viral on different outlets, and that's fans burning the jersey of Albert Pujols. I don't know that I'm a big fan of that, but have you seen that? And if you have, what are your thoughts on that?
I have not seen that. That's borderline ridiculous as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, people have a right to, I guess, behave in whatever way they feel appropriate, as long as they're not hurting anyone else. I don't necessarily get that mindset. I mean, the fact that Albert left the team and is playing for someone else for the remainder of his career doesn't take away what he did for the first 11 years of his career in St. Louis. And you know, if you want to forget about Albert Pujols and erase that history from the Cardinals because you're angry, well, then you're also erasing two world championships. And I don't think anyone wants to do that here. You know, he put up big numbers. He contributed in ways that are darn near irreplaceable. And it's going to be tough to see the Cardinals without number five manning first base and hitting in that third spot and hitting the big home runs and doubles and taking extra bases and everything that he did. I mean, he did it all. It's going to be tough to see the team without that mainstay. But, you know, there could be a new mainstay around the corner. You never know when a guy is going to take the reins and become the next the guy type player. I mean, even Albert himself was drafted in the 13th round. It's not like he was, you know, first round Colby Rasmus type guy coming up and everyone put all a bunch of pressure on him. He kind of came out of nowhere and just happened to click it all at the right time. So I understand the range of emotions fans are going to have here, and some are going to be angry and some are going to, you know, say, well, his legacy here is meaningless now. And while I don't think he's going to necessarily get all the accolades and, you know, the statue outside of Busch, and we may or may not see him come back in a red blazer when it's Hall of Famer day on the field 20 years from now, but nothing he does or says can erase what he did for this team and this city the first 11 years he was here. And to, you know, to completely shun that is to shun all this success that the Cardinals have had over that span of time, and I don't think anyone in their right mind would do that.
Well, here's another theory out there, and I think maybe the fans, yes, they're disappointed and their feelings are hurt with Albert Pujols, but what about the organization itself? I feel like that the organization, the Cardinals, let down Albert Pujols. there's a part of me thinks that they simply decided a long time ago that they never had any intentions of re-signing Albert Pujols. And they could have done that before now, but they really weren't interested in doing that. What are your thoughts that the organization really, I hate to use the word care less because that's not the right word that I want, but we're okay with Albert Pujols not being a Cardinal?
Well, I don't know if I can agree that the organization is okay with Albert Pujols not being a Cardinal because, you know, Bill DeWitt Jr., the principal owner of the team, is very well aware of what legacy means to baseball in St. Louis. And he's been a part of that legacy his entire life. He was, you know, a bat boy for the St. Louis Browns way back in the day. So that piece of it is not lost on him. So I don't see any conceivable way they could really be happy or even relieved that Albert Pujols is not a Cardinal. Just the, you know, take the business side away from it. That piece of it is not something they could really enjoy, I would think. However, on the business side of it, I think they do feel a little bit of relief that they don't have a 10-year contract staring them in the face for this guy with, you know, 220 some odd million attached to it, because that's not a Cardinal contract. I mean, that this market can't bear that type of money in years. Chicago can handle it, LA can handle it, San Francisco can handle it, New York, of course, can handle it, Boston, but that's not the type of market St. Louis is. I mean, they draw fans and they have great revenues, but they don't have the same TV money. They don't have the same income to support that outlay. And they were going to do it because it was Albert, and ultimately it wasn't enough. I think they, meaning the front office, you know, from owner to team president, general manager, or even the team itself, are hurt because he's gone, but kind of relieved that they are a little more flexible today, payroll-wise, than they were had he signed that contract. Another thing, too, you know, I don't know all the details, but I've read a couple different articles, one from local Post-Dispatch writer Joe Strauss, who's a very good writer, and one from a national guy, Bob Nightingale, saying that there was kind of a hardening of the relationship between the Cardinals and the Pujols camp, you know, including agent Dan Lozano and everyone else, during these negotiations. Some of it may have had to do with Matt Holliday getting his contract. Some of it may have had to do with the slow nature of the Cardinals coming to Team Pujols, if you want to call them that, with their offers. And then something about the Cardinals starting the offseason negotiations with an extremely low ball offer. I think I read somewhere it was 5 years and $130 million or something to kind of get the negotiations back going. But maybe Team Pujols perceived that as an insulting offer. I don't know the range of emotions they were feeling there, but something changed between Albert Pujols and St. Louis Cardinals team management over the last 2 years, where he went from, I want to be a Cardinal for life, it's not about the money, to it now is about the money, and I'm going to the Los Angeles Angels. I don't know what it was. I don't have insider information. I wish I did, and I'm definitely not alone, but something is different than it was, and thus he left. So maybe that's on the Cardinals a little bit. Maybe there was more they could have done to sign him sooner. I don't know. I don't know that I can agree with them locking him up for 10 years at that kind of money. You know, 8 years last year seemed like too long. So 10 years a year later seems even longer and worse for the team.
Well, as we look forward into coming up here in I guess it's February, right around the corner, pitchers, I think, report to camp or last part of February, first part of March. Anyway, Jupiter's right around the corner. What are the thoughts on new skipper, some of the what looking forward into spring camp, what's going on there? Obviously, La Russa's not going to be in the dugout. So, what are your thoughts about who's going to be taking that over and so forth?
Well, it's going to be different, that's for sure. I mean, I'm not sure how old you are, but Tony La Russa has been managing the Cardinals for almost half my life, and now he's not anymore. So that's really weird to think about. Not just his managerial style, but just that presence, seeing that face and the sunglasses and the crazy hair and everything that went along with having Tony La Russa as your manager at the helm of that team is now gone for the first time in forever. And it's kind of strange. It's almost stranger than Albert being gone, but I'm excited to see what Mike Matheny will bring to the table. He played under Tony La Russa for a number of years. The pitching coach during that time was Dave Duncan. He's still in the dugout. Matheny knows the system. He knows the team. He knows the city. He knows Cardinal baseball as an entity. And I think he's going to have every intention of doing the right thing. He'll probably make some mistakes along the way, and he may get killed for them. This isn't Tony, but Tony got killed for a lot of stuff he did anyway. So, maybe that part doesn't really matter. It's a new look. St. Louis Cardinals franchise, no doubt about it. And, I'm happy to see Lance Berkman coming back for another year. I'm happy to see that Chris Carpenter extended for a couple more years. Getting Adam Wainwright back will be huge for the rotation. And, in the National League Central, it seems like every team has a chance. There's never a prohibitive favorite unless it's the Cardinals in the middle of the last decade. So, they're gonna have to get over their World Series hangover and play to compete, because the Brewers and the Reds and the Cubs will probably all be there. But it's going to be and maybe even the Pirates after what we saw last year. But I think it's going to be a fun year. I think it's going to be very transitional but still very successful if both of those things can happen at the same time.
Well, and I agree with you. I like Mike Matheny. I know Francona was tossed around there for a little bit. And he's not the sexy name that maybe a lot of people would have liked to seen, but I like him. He used to be a Cardinal, obviously. He's very, like you said, very familiar with the organization. He played under Tony La Russa, so he's very familiar with the team, and I think he's got the respect of the team, and he's got the respect of the clubhouse. So I think that aspect of a new manager, I think they made a great choice, and I'm very, very curious to see how he's going to do. What about some of the other coaches? Is he going to keep around Mark McGwire, some of the other people around the dugout?
Yeah, a lot of the same guys are back. I know that they brought in John Mabry to be assistant hitting coach, so that's a playing peer of Matheny, and I believe he played with McGwire and Carpenter as well. I think he was still on the Cardinals when Carpenter came over, so he's a familiar face. I know that there are a couple changes that have occurred, but largely the coaching staff stays the same. We'll still see Jose Oquendo manning the third base coaching box, and the only difference is he won't have Albert Pujols running through his stop signs anymore. I think a big piece of the puzzle that this team really, really needs, the argument for Tony La Russa, for or against Tony La Russa, I guess, either one can be strong, but no one can deny the impact Dave Duncan has on the pitching staff. And I think losing him would have been, and eventually will be when he retires, a huge blow to the Cardinal rotation, Cardinal bullpen, how the catchers handle the team while they're on the field. And, that's having him back gives me a real optimistic view of how this team is likely to perform for as long as he's in the dugout. I mean, the guy – the guy knows pitching, he knows catching, he knows how to manage that side of it, and he taught Matheny for years, and Matheny taught Yadier Molina everything he knows coming up as a young player. So that's a strong kind of coaching, managing, you know, triumvirate, both in the dugout and on the field, that I think will help carry this team.
Well, and it's going to be an exciting off season. It's going to be an exciting spring camp. I personally, no Hispanic pun intended, but I say adios, amigo. Albert Pujols made a business decision. He made the best decision for himself. And so I'm not a hater. I'm just disappointed, and I just think that Albert – could have done better, could have done it a different way. I think that we could sit around and talk about the things that could have been, would have been, should have been. But the interesting aspect is going to happen if and when he comes back to Busch Stadiums, if that ever happens, in either capacity as a player or as a retired player, he comes back. Who knows what the schedules may hold, but if they do some interleague play and the Cardinals play the Angels, I mean, it'd be interesting to see how that goes. Well, Chris, it's been an honor to have you here. We've got to go here, but to any final thoughts that I may not have asked you or talked with you about, anything you want to share with us about the St. Louis Cardinals or Albert Pujols?
Well, I just think that, looking out my window, the sun rose today, just like it will every day, after he's gone. And, today's going to be a tough day because the Angels hold their press conference to introduce him to their team, and that will be carried live here in St. Louis on probably every station we have. So I'm hoping today brings a little bit more closure to myself and Cardinal fans as a whole to say, okay, he's really gone now. We see him in this new uniform. He's got Angels across his chest instead of the birds on the bat. And that's going to be a tough sight, and then it'll be over, and then maybe we can all start moving on and realizing that, this is still a world championship team that has the majority of its players coming back, playing in the same exact division, same exact stadium, and still has a great chance to repeat as a playoff team in 2012 with or without Albert Pujols.
Chris Reed, how can people find your work, buddy?
They can find me on my blog, which is bird-brained.mlblogs.com. They can find me Saturday mornings on i70baseball.com, Monday mornings on insidestl.com, and on Twitter at birdbrained.
Chris, it's been an honor to have you. Do not be a stranger. I'm sure we'll be talking again toward the end of February or March as the club heads to Jupiter and we get all revved up for a brand new season.
It's been my pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Chris Reed, blogger, writer for the St. Louis Cardinals, just really helping us understand what just happened this week. It is true. Albert Pujols signed with the Angels. We're a hell of a lot of money. A lot of money. And I guess it really is about the money at the end of the day. But one guy who isn't making any money is up next. Jimmy the Intern. Be talking to him about a really fun topic that I'm looking forward to talk about. Yes, University of Kentucky comes to Assembly Hall for the first time in years. And this game is one for the record books. We'll be right back right here on the Balance Radio Network.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Do you like what you hear on the Balance and Fantasy Football Huddle? Then check us out on the World Wide Web. Facebook, search The Balance. Twitter, T-Balance. You can also send us an email at tbalance@ymail.com. And at any time, check us out on www.thebalanceonline.com.
Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions. Work with them today.
Sports. March, Bart rides up in the front seat today because he's a good guy at sports.
All right. Another good guy at sports, or at least good at talking about sports, is joining us now, Mr. Jimmy the Intern. Jimmy Cavanaugh from down at IU, going to talk to us about a big game coming up. Jimmy, how we doing, buddy?
I'm not doing too bad, Tom. I appreciate any indication whatsoever that I might be good at sports. I have a nice 15-foot jump shot, so I'll take what I can get there.
You're good. You're good at the John Madden basketball game, huh? Or the PlayStation basketball game, huh?
Well, I'm outstanding at the John Madden football game. So I'm a pretty mean Madden player. Formerly nationally ranked. So that's a pretty big deal to me, not really to anyone else, but it's a nice little feather in my cap.
Well, it's exciting to have you on board, Mr. Jimmy the Intern here. Let's talk a little bit. Let's unpack this game, the biggest game of the season. IU, UK, always a big game, always a big rivalry, obviously. But this is an extra special game today because why? Because IU comes in undefeated, and if they can beat Kentucky, I think that says a lot. So let's unpack it. IU, UK, Jimmy, take it away.
All right, well, you made a good point talking about how this is the most important game of the year, and that's not too far off. It's not too far gone to make that conclusion. You don't have to make a big leap because the second biggest game is probably either Butler or NC State, two games that for a normal high-profile college basketball team wouldn't be huge, huge deals. For IU, they're coming back from a lot. We all know this. We've been through it. We've watched the 6-win team, the 10-win team, and the 12-win team for the past 3 years and wondered when that was going to end. This squad looks like it has what it takes to get it done. And number one, Kentucky, coming into Assembly Hall, one of the best teams, maybe the best team in the country, and not just right now, but until the end of the season, team that has one of the best chances to get to that, get to the Final Four, win a national title for John Calipari down there. So this is going to be a big game. Assembly Hall is going to be going crazy. And then getting to the actual game itself, it'll be interesting to see exactly what Kentucky is able to do. They're able to do a whole lot of stuff. Whether they go fast, whether they go slow, their offense is really pace neutral. They can win going whatever speed their opponent wants to go. They have the talent to score in the front court. They have the talent to run up and down the floor, and they will score a bunch of points on you if you let them run up and down the floor. So there are people wondering whether IU needs to speed them up, whether IU needs to slow them down. And honestly, it does seem like Kentucky's going to be able to succeed scoring-wise whatever IU wants to do to them. So I'd say it's really in IU's best interest to just play their game. Run up and down the court as much as they can, try to see if they can score some fast break baskets and try to turn Marquise Teague over. I think that'll actually be the biggest key in this game, pressuring Marcus Teague, the point guard, freshman point guard, really good guy in a line of point guards they've had there under Calipari, John Wall, Brandon Knight being the others. but he's also young. He's proven, you know, he's just a freshman. He's proven that he's inexperienced. He's proven that he can be forced to turn the ball over. He can get a little ahead of himself sometimes and doesn't let the game slow down enough. So I think that will be a big factor for Indiana. If they can turn Marquise Teague over, they can force him to make some mistakes. That will be a big first step in trying to go out there and get that win.
All right. Well, let's talk about you know, some of the key things that Coach Cream has to do to beat UK. Obviously, UK will put it in their face all day long. We'll do the full court press all day long, and they've got big guys in their face all day long. So they are going to wear out IU. So what does IU have to do to know that this is a marathon, not a race, and to play IU basketball? They don't have to play UK basketball. They have to play IU basketball, and they're at Assembly Hall. So what does IU have to do to win this game?
Well, it's not going to be easy. They're going to need to get really good games from their best seven players. We're talking about their starters, Jordan Holes, Rodell Jones, Victor Oladipo, Watford Zeller, and then off the bench, Sheehy and Elston. Nothing against the rest of the guys on the team. This is really a seven-man squad. It's the Magnificent Seven. No one's really calling them that. I wish they would, because that sounds like a pretty cool nickname. But, you know, getting back to it, just the squad itself, and those seven guys need to have a really solid game. And I think, too, that somebody off the bench, in addition, you know, Remy Abel needs to come in and provide some really strong minutes defensively. Or Matt Roth needs to come in and hit two or three threes. It's going to need to be a complete team effort, because IU does not have the, quite honestly, they don't have the talent the UK does. They're not really in the same ballpark. And that's nothing against IU. They're a good team. Kentucky is just absurdly, obscenely talented. They're going to need to get a good game from everyone. Jordan Halls is going to need to hit threes. They're going to also need to avoid turning the ball over. I'd say the biggest player I'm going to be watching to see what he does is Rodell Jones, because I've seen too many games this year where poor decision-making, poor ball handling, poor passing have nearly cost this team a victory, have really cost this team momentum, and I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen again today, and that's not something that I'm happy saying. So if this team wants to win, I think Jordan Holes needs to hit threes, they need to get solid production out of everyone in their regular rotation, and a couple extra guys. And Verdell Jones needs to play within himself, play under control. All that stuff happens, I think this team's got a pretty good shot to win.
And obviously, if IU can beat UK, they're not only going to climb, I would assume, climb in the AP ranks, but they're going to climb up in the national conversations. And a lot of people are saying, well, they haven't played anybody. They haven't played anybody. Well, yeah, they've played some good teams. And if they could beat UK, especially rival Kentucky, when they come calling, it's going to be incredible. Correct me if I'm wrong on this, Jimmy, but is it UK the number one team in the nation?
Yeah, UK is number one right now. And getting to the conversation, IU jumping in that conversation, there have been some people jumping the gun a little bit too. Not necessarily in a bad way, but there are three ESPN writers, I think Diamond Lung and two other guys I can't remember off the top of my head. There are three of 10 ESPN college basketball writers who are picking IU to beat Kentucky this week. And Dan Dockich went on a Kentucky radio show and said that it wouldn't be an upset if IU beat Kentucky. So there are some people talking about this game right now. It's a really high-profile game. It's featured prominently on ESPN's college basketball page. So there are people talking about IU. They're going to be all eyes on Bloomington. I don't think it'll be disappointing to anyone outside of Indiana if, you know, IU's not able to pull off an upset. I don't think people think that says anything about IU. But if they do pull off the upset, if they come out and win, you're completely right on that they would climb the polls, I would imagine. If they somehow beat the number one team in the country, remain undefeated and aren't ranked, I think there's going to be some explaining to do there. But as far as that goes, that's pretty remote. I don't think that's something to worry about. And they beat Kentucky. They end up 9-0 with the start they've had and a marquee win like that. not only does it really jumpstart this team in the national conversation, but that's got to do wonders for this team's confidence, do wonders for this team going forward.
And I tell you what, and to quote Dan Dockage, because I think I heard that interview, he said, gun to head, IU wins. I pick IU with a gun to my head, I say IU wins. No. Dan is fun to listen to. I like his style of a show that he has, and obviously former coach of IU, he knows a little something about IU. And you're right, it shouldn't be a big surprise at all for IU to beat Kentucky. I don't think it will be. It'll be exciting. But the marquee matchup, obviously, Jimmy, will be the IU freshman, the big man Cody Zeller, against UK freshman Anthony Davis, who he previously has faced, by the way, in AAU tournaments and in practice as teammates in the McDonald All-American game. So, Zeller versus Davis. This is going to be a cage match.
Yeah, I think Anthony Davis is that kind of player that Cody Zeller would have most of his trouble with. Bigger guys, Zeller can get around. Smaller guys, Zeller can shoot over. Davis is as athletic as anyone he's played this year, and really as athletic as anybody in the country. Anthony Davis is a freak of nature, 6'11". Less than he's 6'11", I believe, 230 pounds, about the same size as Zeller. Maybe he's a little smaller, 210, 220. But he wasn't able to guard Tyler Zeller in the North Carolina game because he was so much smaller. Tyler Zeller is a bigger guy, about 250 pounds, was able to just back him under the basket and do what he wanted. Cody Zeller is not that kind of player. He relies more on quickness and agility, and Anthony Davis has that in spades. So that will be an interesting matchup. I think that if there's any bad matchup for Cody Zeller, it's this one. And that's why I'm really worried about this game, because Kentucky has guys to throw at Cody Zeller. If IU wins this one and it's on the shoulders of Cody Zeller, maybe we need to start worrying about him leaving for the NBA, because there's no way on paper that Cody Zeller should be able to dominate a Kentucky front line with three, you know, legitimate five-star defender guys coming at him. Terrence Jones is somebody they could throw on him from time to time. Davis will have the assignment. And the guy coming off the bench, Lloyd Vargas, the big freshman, another obviously big freshman that Cal brought in. They're going to have guys to throw at Zeller. I think they'll be able to throw him off his game. We haven't seen him get thrown off his game yet, but if there's going to be a team that does it, it's going to be Kentucky. And we'll see exactly how he responds and how the team responds to that.
Well, we're talking IU Kentucky with Jimmy the intern. Always good to have Jimmy on board with us. Obviously, you catch him during our weekday show with Gary Snyder on the Balance/Gary Snyder show. And, you know, we had a rough season with football, but we're in to basketball. It's Kentucky versus Indiana. Really, that's all that needs to be said. These two schools awash in tradition and national titles, each passionately followed by a fanatical fan base eager for wins and bragging rights. And let's face it, if IU can beat Kentucky, this is going to be a huge, huge bragging right that they'll carry with them for a long time. UK leads the series 31-23. The Cats have won three in a row and 16 of 20 since 1991. The last time the two teams met in Bloomington, Indiana was number four. UK won hard-fought 90-73 contest. Indiana last beat UK in Bloomington in December of 2007 by a score of 70-51. That's about to change. So let's hope that is in fact the truth. So let's talk about some of the other IU players that don't get a lot of notoriety, but obviously are key points in this victory against University of Kentucky. So, Jimmy, who are some of the other players that isn't like Cody Zeller, but is consistent and will play a key factor in this game?
If you're asking for two guys who are consistent and have been really throughout the season, I'd say Jordan Holes and Victor Oladipo are going to be two guys. Will Sheehy also throw in there as someone who's been really consistent. Sheehy's actually leading all Big Ten scorers off the bench. in the conference. He's doing a great job at that, being a spark plug energy guy and scorer off of the bench, averaging more than 11 points per game. Those three guys are going to be huge. Oladipo is going to be asked to do a really good defensive job on Deron Lamb, possibly Terrence Jones. Sheehy will definitely see a lot of Terrence Jones on him on defense. He's a really good defender. He likes the challenge of defending bigger players, tougher players, and just athletic, capable players. And Terrence Jones is all of those things. Getting back, the point that I made about Cody Zeller having his hands full, the bigger point I was trying to make was that while Kentucky has guys who can pick up the slack if Anthony Davis doesn't have a good game, I mean, if Davis doesn't have a good game, they have Deron Lamb, they have Terrence Jones, they have Marcus Teague. They have all these guys who can come in, they can score points, they can get Kentucky out ahead of Indiana. IU is less fortunate than Kentucky in that capability, in that aspect, because if Cody Zeller doesn't have a good game, they can less afford that than someone like Anthony Davis not having a good game. So it's going to come down to holes, Victor Oladipo and Will Sheehy. If they have outstanding games, I think IU is going to be a lot closer in this one than otherwise. Christian Watford, too. I'll plagiarize from Dana Doggett for a little bit, because I listened to his show, and I totally agree with him on this count, that Christian Watford is going to need to play like the Christian Watford we saw last year, like the Christian Watford we saw against North Carolina State. Because if he's involved in the game the right way, he can be a very dangerous player. He can hit from the outside. He can rebound down low. And he can at least provide a presence down low. He doesn't have much of a post game, but he's 6'9", can draw the defense and bring him off of people on the outside. But I think he needs to have a really good game. He needs to shoot it well. He needs to stay involved, and he needs to move the ball in the offense. Because he can draw fouls. He can hit those threes. And he could very legitimately have a 15-20 point game. He has that capability, but he's also going to be matched up on Terrence Jones a lot of the time, but Sheehy isn't. So it's going to be him defensively on Terrence Jones and him offensively in the flow of the offense. He's the other guy than Verdell, who's had some trouble keeping it flowing. But if basically all the guys I mentioned, and this is kind of an indication of what I think IU needs to do. They need to have five guys in their starting lineup, really, in the seven guys overall. They need to have everyone play pretty well. I don't think they can survive a down night for one or two guys, because I think Cody Zeller might be the one having that down night. And if that's the case, the rest of the team is going to really need to pick up the slack.
Now, we're talking to Jimmy the intern about this huge game against IU and Kentucky coming up. Now, I'm sure everybody has seen the highlights on ESPN of Kentucky basketball games, of you know, on SportsCenter or whatever, and you see the number of breakaway dunks with athletes like Terrence Jones and freshman Anthony Davis. Coach Crean has to be concerned about Kentucky's defense. So what does IU have to do to stop such a powerful defense?
They need to run. I think they need to try to get easy points in transition, because we saw in the North Carolina game, North Carolina shot the lights out. They shot, I believe, more than 60% from beyond the arc and still couldn't beat Kentucky. Now, it wasn't Rupp, and Kentucky did have a pretty decent game that day. Kentucky didn't shoot well. North Carolina shot the lights out, and Kentucky still managed to pull away with the win. I'd say that defense is the key to them going on runs. That's what they do. They go on those 8 to 10 point runs. I guarantee that we'll see one or two of those today, and it'll all be about how Indiana responds. Because outside of those runs, Kentucky is a basketball team just like everyone else. They're talented. They can score in half court. They can score full speed. But I think IU has the capability to play with them. I think they can play defensively. You know they're going to play hard. They always seem to. And this is a big game. But really, if we're talking about stopping the defense and minimizing Kentucky's defensive effect, I'd get out and run, because IU struggled in the half court against Stetson this year. They didn't play that well in the half court against Stetson the last game they played. If they can't do that against Stetson, they will certainly not be able to do it against Kentucky. I don't think we've seen a whole lot of development so far in the half court offense in terms of offensive sets. IU's been more talented than their opposition. and they'll be more talented than all other opposition this year. Kentucky is not one of those games. They cannot get away with isolating guys in the half court the same way that they can against other teams. So I think really it's going to key on them getting those easy baskets in transition.
And I totally agree. We're running out of time here, but real quickly, I do want to point out, you know, obviously the Cats point guard, Marquis Teague, hails from Indianapolis here in Indianapolis, you know, just real close to IU campus. Obviously, IU tried real hard to get him. They would want nothing better than to rub it in Teague's face. Hey, should have came to IU. Thoughts?
I think there are a lot of fans that feel that way, too. I don't know if I've told you this before. I went and covered the junior-senior all-star game last year in Washington, Indiana, Cody Zeller's hometown. And during the introductions, everybody got crazy ovations, great ovations. Cody's cheerers were great. Austin Etherington got some great ovations from some Hoosier fans down there. Marcus Teague got booed at his own all-star game. He got booed at the Kentucky-Indiana all-star game in Indiana, in Indianapolis when they played that. So there's not a lot of love for UK guys in Indiana. And while I don't think the team's focusing on telling some freshmen they wanted last year, say, hey, why don't you come to, maybe you should come to Indiana. I don't think that's on their mind. But yeah, I'm pretty sure it will be on the fans' mind. There are a lot of fans that really aren't happy about the fact that this guy was the UK. And even though they may not be holding on to it with how well this team is doing, I think they'd get some enjoyment out of it, just kind of rubbing it in a little bit.
I couldn't agree more. Well, Jimmy, it's been great having you. Any last-second thoughts, and where can people find your work?
I guess final thought, Jordan Holes, yeah, 25 points from him today would be nice. You know, I think they need threes. I think they need threes. They need to shoot well. As far as finding my work goes, I actually had my last show of the semester on WIUX, so that's no longer applicable. I think, though, next semester you'll be able to find me 10 to 11 Fridays, WIUX.org. Also, I'm putting up a lot of work for IU Sportcom. You can follow me on Twitter at JPCIV and check out IUSportcom.com for my latest work.
Thank you, Jimmy. We'll talk to you later on this week, I'm sure, and hopefully about an IU victory.
All right, thanks so much, Tom.
All right. Jimmy the intern talking to us about IU UK, guys. Well, that's going to wrap it up. Another show in the books. Call it a win. Absolutely. My name's Tom Marquis, Al Presidente. We'll see you guys Monday live with the Gary Snyder Show from 5 to 7 right here on the Balance Radio Network. You guys have a great weekend. And remember, if you're going to drink, just don't drive.
Boo!
Boo!
That was the worst thing I ever heard.
It was terrible.
Horrendous.
Well, it wasn't that bad.
Oh, yeah?
Well, there were parts of it I liked.
Yeah, I liked a lot of it.
Yeah, it was good.
It was great.
It's wonderful.
Oh, bro.